So here at The Expansive, we are always looking for new podcasts to tune into. And what's been really great to see is that more and more organizations are coming to the party. They are busy creating high quality content. And one podcast that we recently came across was from Investec. And through this podcast, they are really looking at adding more value to the conversation around sustainability. John, what did you think of this pod?
I loved it. You know, I've worked with Investec a few times. I'm a big fan of the brand. And now that what they've got is a award-winning journalist. I think her name's Iman Rapetti, who brings sort of like top thought leaders into the discussions around the challenges and opportunities we have around sustainability. It's no secret that South Africa has had a problem with Eskom for the longest time. While we have incredible weather and incredible sort of sustainability options around us, around wind and solar and so many other things that we could be doing. And I love it that they are actually bringing this together into a pod where we can hear the people that are making those decisions and how South Africa is becoming more sustainable through a collaborative process. So bravo, Investec, really enjoying this fact that you brought this out. And I think they've done already 10 episodes. It's called The Current Podcast with Iman Rapetti. Have you listened to a couple of them, Eric?
Yeah, dude. You know what I always, what I really appreciate about it is that it's not just about awareness, because I think sustainability is a buzzword that we hear all the time. And what I like about the approach to this is that it's not just about the awareness, it's about action. It's about like, what do we actually do to create sustainability? And also, it's not about going alone. It's about the power of collaboration. And I mean, we speak about collaboration on the pod all the time and how important it is for trying to build the future. Like, no one can do that on their own. And so it really is about involving investors and businesses and policymakers and you as the individual in terms of how do we go about creating a more sustainable future. So if you are passionate about our planet, our country, and the potential for a brighter, greener future, then tune into Investec's new podcast, The Current. You'll find tools, resources, and the inspiration you need to be a part of the change. Let's turn today's challenges into tomorrow's opportunities, and let's do that together.
Welcome to The Expansive. Fantastic to have you again with us. And this Olympics has been a weird one, Eric. I mean, what we remember from this Olympics isn't the world records, isn't the incredible feats of human potential, but we remember Ray Gunn, some pole vaulter who has a great big manhood. And
a lot of talent, yes.
And a Turkish guy that just wanted to get his dog back and loves cats and just rocked up with his everyday clothes to get a silver. Amazing what the world of memes has done to the Olympics for all of us. So yeah, excited for this. Excited. How was your experience of the Olympics?
Yeah, well, I think we kind of spoke about it yesterday. It's been interesting that I watched the entire Olympics in short form content. You know, like everything was on TikTok or Instagram. Yeah. And then of course, you had the guys on LinkedIn who had to take whatever is happening at the Olympics and turn it into like some B2B influencer post about sales or leadership. I'm just like, guys, chill.
But you know, I actually want to...
Like, let us just enjoy the Olympics.
I also want to just have a quick rant on this because I've been seeing this happen on social media because somebody will go to the optometrist and make it a post about seeing the world in a different way. I'm like, guy, can you just go to the optometrist? And firstly, don't tell us you've been to the optometrist. We don't care. And secondly, does it have to be something deep? Like, why must it always be something deep? And I feel... Sometimes people get onto this bandwagon that they've now become some sort of thought leader. Now everything they do must have some meaning to it. And I think about, come on, man.
It has to have a lesson, a deep life lesson. Yeah. Everything.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah. I remember a few years ago, I actually felt quite bad because when I was writing for Better Man, you know, I was doing this daily email, and this one guy sent me something at a point and it was like this very random post about him stepping off a boat onto a pier and like this like lesson or insight that he had from this moment. And I was like, like exactly to this point, like should everything be a lesson? Like can't you just step off a boat onto a pier without it being a big lesson that we have to like glean something from? And he actually took it quite personally and he stopped writing for a while. So I feel a bit bad about that.
You should have written him back and said, here's the lesson. Here's the lesson for you. I also think there's another thing that happens on social media is everybody's so kind and everybody's so heart-led. Mm. I'm like, no, we're not. Stop acting like Gandhi and Mother Teresa. You're not Gandhi. You're not Mother Teresa. You're not Buddha. You're human. And it's actually okay to be irritable. It's okay not to be kind. In fact, the kindness is the only lesson. It's rubbish. Rubbish. Kindness can't be the only lesson. You have to have boundaries. You have to have intuition. You have to have kindness as part of your day. The only thing you should be kind to is dogs. Everything else, you don't have to always be kind to. It's just not something that's necessary.
I saw your post about it and I liked your comment when I saw, because the guy said kindness is everything and you said boundaries.
Yes.
I thought it was really good. It's very, very insightful comment. More
thank
than
you.
The post itself.
Let's take a lesson in that, Eric. No, I'm kidding. But as always, we always start off our episodes with the sort of tech insights of the week. And the two stories that we want to cover for you. And the first story, obviously, is the one that's all over the press at the moment, where we've had the CEO and founder of Telegram being arrested in France. And I thought this was really interesting because it shows you that Mark Zuckerberg and Sergey Brin and all the people from all the other tech companies can travel quite comfortably into Europe, but the one guy that hasn't allowed governments to interject into his messaging system is now being arrested, which shows us that everything has got this lure of governmental integration into it. And so it's interesting. I mean, what are your thoughts and what have you been reading about it, if anything?
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is I remember when Telegram just came onto the scene and it was all about privacy. And I jumped onto it initially, and then at some point, I realized that it wasn't as much for peer-to-peer as it was for like group communication. Like all of a sudden, you had all these big communities that were run on Telegram, Bitcoin communities. Kind of anything.
Trafficking, and I think that's kind of the point.
That's the whole point. It's like anything was, everything was encrypted, and like all these big communities formed on Telegram. And for those who don't know, Telegram is it's a WhatsApp alternative. It has close to 1 billion users, so it's pretty significant. But since then, I've actually lost complete track of it. Like, I don't know if you use it, but I don't use it for anything. I don't know any of my friends that use it for anything.
Well, it's only when I smuggle drugs and fur coats. That's the only time.
Please just make sure that everyone who listens to this knows that for the very first time listening to this,
it's just for
the government listening to John.
Especially for Dubai government. I love Dubai. I'm just joking.
But you know, I think it's very interesting that we often see we see this all the time, that people create a tool for one reason and you know other people go and they misuse that tool to their own benefit. And unfortunately, you know, the best of intentions to create a tool that allows people to have encrypted conversation because more and more we value our privacy. But of course, with that comes people who have malicious intent and they'll use it for that. And it's the same thing with artificial intelligence. We'll see the same thing play out. But of course, progress in technology doesn't stop. And so we just have to keep getting better at having guardrails in place that helps us to navigate as technology evolves.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and also he's quite an interesting guy. I watched his interview on Tucker.
Very interesting.
Very interesting. Yeah. I mean, he's like smart. Very smart. I mean, from a very young age, was almost caught up in the same thing in Russia, right? Russia also wanted to get the back door into his Facebook and he didn't want to give it. And he eventually had to sell it and leave. And it shows that he's been having this sort of issue with governments, with these platforms for a long time. I mean, he's 39 years old. He's really good looking. He's worth $9.5 billion. And he's had over 100 children. Do you know this? Through sperm donations. So
really?
Yeah. And I was reading up.
Oh, yes. I think I've heard that, actually.
And he's almost like the same as Elon Musk, where they want to keep procreating. It's like you've got to keep procreating. And it's almost like this incredible instinctual I guess like as a billionaire, what you think of yourself is of this incredible stature. You must have some deep like megalomaniac ideation about yourself. And then when you do, all you want to do is spread your seed. You're like, the world will be better with more of me in it. So let's just have more of me everywhere. So Elon Musk with his 10 kids, and now this guy's like seeded 100 kids around the world. But look, I mean, really interesting. The Snowden and all these other characters that have also been sort of like involved in this world are also chirping and coming in with sort of ideas of what needs to be happening. But it just shows you, man, it's like, yeah, the governments don't want you to be saying things that aren't agreeing with what they have to say. And this is becoming more and more apparent, you know, as we evolve, we realize that all news channels are propaganda. All channels of social and chats are being watched and monitored and checked. And so, yeah, I mean, this is kind of the world we live in. It's
Manipulated. Yeah, for sure. There was even a thing today about Facebook where Mark Zuckerberg sent out a release about their involvement in the elections, the previous elections. So, yeah, so like it's tough. Like the, you know, we live in a world driven by algorithm, and that algorithm is very easily manipulated.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's exactly why they wanted to shut TikTok down as well, because they couldn't manage that algorithm. So they wanted to control the algorithm. The algorithm wasn't controllable. Anyway, so that's the first one. We'll keep you up to date of what's going on. I'm sure if you're on social media, you're watching this with Pavel Durov is his name. I wish him luck. He lives in Dubai. Apparently, the Dubai government has also gotten hold of the French government and wanting to do some negotiations. And yeah, good luck to him, and good luck to how this pans out. The second story that we have today for the latest sort of insights is Dolce & Gabbana have now recently launched a new perfume for dogs. It's called Fefe.
Yes, man.
Now, Fefe. So now, I mean, obviously the Dolce & Gabbana guys are gay, and you must see the dog there. So it's such a beautifully manicured dog, as I can imagine very wealthy gay guys would have. And I'm always I'm a little bit suspect. I mean, obviously this is not a tech insight. We think it's funny. I'm a bit cautious of this perfume, and I tell you why. I'm sure you also watch your dogs. Definitely the dogs on the farm, where my parents farm, they continuously rub themselves in skunk shit. And they have it by their necks, you know, like they have the skunk shit on their necks. And they have the skunk shit on their necks. And my mom and my dad and I are like, what are you doing? This is disgusting. Get away from us. And they're like, they obviously think they smelled really, really good. And they obviously don't. So I don't know if Fefe is something to be trusted at this stage.
I just don't think it's for farm dogs. I think it's for upper market New York dogs that are traveling in handbags.
No, but
those dogs grow up smelling like Chanel, you know? So like for them, they've been demanding Fefe for years.
Yes, that's right, that's
and
right.
And now it's finally just come to fruition,
what,
you know?
What about your dogs? Exactly. Do they not perfumize themselves when you're going for walks?
Well, to be honest, we've done that before. We've deodorized our dogs before.
Yeah.
You get like, but like these are like mostly like sort of like neutralizer sprays.
Right.
So we've done that before. Yeah. But like we've thought about like the dog perfume industry maybe like 2 years ago, because it's coming.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's here. Yeah. It's here. And I don't know if you know this, but the pet care, dog pet care industry is $250 billion. Like it's a huge market and growing rapidly.
Did you see in South Korea, more people bought strollers for dogs than they did for human babies last year? Yeah, this year.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you would never have thought that. Never. Yeah. Like where you have like a stroller for dogs. Yeah. Like you. Yeah. But our relationship with the dogs have tremendously changed in the past few years. And these kind of products, I mean, like we'll talk about it in the pod at some point, but Dan and I, we're also launching some products for dogs. Yeah. And it's because it's a different relationship.
Yeah, totally.
So will I go and buy Dolce & Gabbana's Fefe? Probably not.
Fefe, yes.
I don't think I'll go buy it.
I don't think your dogs are the Fefe dogs. I don't think yours, they need a more butch.
No, Atlas isn't for sure, Atlas isn't a Fefe dog. Yeah.
Anyway, so those are the insights of this
week. And Jaeger needs something
more mature. He needs a more refined,
more, yeah, like a gentleman like a, smell. Something that smells of wisdom. And exactly. Yeah, there we go.
Exactly. Bless both of them. Big kisses for them.
What does that smell like?
It smells like more treats. That's what it smells like. More biltong treats. That's what you need. If you have a dog and you're listening to this, please go and kiss them and give them big hugs and big love from Eric and I.
Have you watched that new documentary on dogs on Netflix?
No, how the dog brains work or something.
Yeah, like it just takes you through like how much more potent their hearing is, how much more potent their sense of smell is, how they can map a room in 3D just by using their sense of smell. They essentially don't need their eyes. They can just map the entire world using their nose.
Wow.
And then, like, it's very much focused on service dogs and how they, like, how dogs are being trained for everything from cancer detection to anxiety detection, and how they can sniff out, like, cancer cells that almost can't be detected by technology yet, and how they use them for, obviously, for search and rescue. And the guy was saying, like, there's nothing that comes close to a dog's ability to find a person in rubble. Like, he says, there's no technology we have that can find people as quickly and as effectively as dogs do. And so they're talking about, like, some dogs have, like, ADD, you know, like a deficit disorder, attention.
Bean does it.
And how good they are for certain tasks like that, because they get to move quickly between things and smell and, like, you know, figure things out. Very, very interesting.
Yeah, I've downloaded it, so I'm definitely going to watch it.
And the evolution, you know, like if you map their DNA, they have 99% wolf DNA in them because of, you know, that's where they come from. And over time, they just started following humans around because they would get scraps and foods and then became more and more friendly and eventually, like, they just, like, moved in.
Yeah, I love them. Fuck so much. Too much. Eric was just recently in Dominican Republic and had a super adventure and want to chat into understanding how that went for you, Eric, and are you still jet lagging? That's the real question we have.
I'm still jet lagging hard. No, listen, this was the most intense trip that I've had in my life. But we'll chat a bit about that, and then I'd love to hear more about your Joe Dispenza. Like, your, this was your 12th retreat, 12th. Hey? 12th, sorry.
Yes.
By the way, today is podcast number 222.
Wow.
And
triple two.
I was just curious. What does that mean? It says the number 222 represents balance, harmony, and spiritual alignment.
Yes, baby.
How does that make you feel? Here we go.
I'm so spiritual. Yes.
Yeah. Listen, so I went to go speak for entrepreneurs organizations, Latin American and Caribbean chapters. They had a leadership summit last week, Tuesday. So that was the 20th of August, I think. And I wanted to share my travel experience with you because it was, you know, this is what we do for a living. You know, I mean, you travel nonstop. I don't travel nearly as much as you. But every time I travel, I get a bit more respect for you. I'm sure you have many of these stories as well. But so the way that I had to fly was to go from Cape Town to Sao Paulo, and then from Sao Paulo to Santo Domingo. And I do my first leg, which was fine, South African Airways, like, great little flight, no problem. I get to the other side, and I had to catch a shuttle between the airport and the hotel. And I had about six to seven hours to get to the hotel, have a good bit of sleep, and then get up at 1:30 the next morning for my next flight. So I get there and I was told, you know, go find the desk. They'll tell you where the shuttle is. I arrive at the terminal. There's no desk. There's no one to speak to. Everyone who I ask about shuttle just points me to the same direction, which is, like, at that terminal, but just a little bit further down.
You know what's amazing, sort of, Eric, is when you very few people speak English. That's like unreal.
Yeah. That's a huge
it's
thing.
Unreal. Like,
that's a huge
so
thing on
few
that side.
People speak
yeah.
English. Yeah. Okay.
Very, very broken. And so... So I finally get to this, like, shuttle destination, and I see, like, Marriott is coming past, Hilton is coming past. I'm like, cool, I'm at the right spot, you know, like, all the hotels are coming here. And I wait probably for about an hour. And I'm like, this guy isn't coming. And I start going onto the reviews for the airport, because like for the shuttle service, because on the hotel's website itself, you can't find any information. So I'm like reading the reviews, and this guy is saying like, yeah, the shuttle comes every hour on the hour. So I'm like, okay, I must have just missed it. I'll just wait a bit longer. I probably wait another 40 minutes. And eventually I'm like, no, it's like something must be wrong. I read further into reviews, probably like 200 reviews down. I find a review that says, if you wait at Terminal 3, you'll wait forever. You have to go to Terminal 2. That's where the shuttle goes to. So, dude, so it's a 15-minute walk. So I walk all the way to Terminal 2. I get there. I just missed the shuttle. I have to wait another 45 minutes for it to come around again. By the time I get to the hotel, it is 10 o'clock. So now I have like about 2.5, you know, to get a bit of sleep. And you know how it is. Like when you're trying to sleep and you know you have a flight, and especially such a short time, every half an hour, you're just like, you're awake. So I try and get a bit of sleep. 1:30, I'm up. Oh, no, wait. I get to the hotel. They check me in. And even at the hotel, like they didn't really speak much English. But so they check me in, take me up to my room. I get to my room, tap my card, doesn't work. And like, this is 10 o'clock, tired, yeah. Like, you know, yeah. Already been a long day.
Personalities ran out.
Go back down.
Personalities ran out, yeah.
Personalities ran out. Yeah. Go back down, say to her, listen, my card isn't working. She's like, oh, that's so strange. Let me give you a new one. Here's your card. Go back up. Card doesn't work. Go back down. She's like, okay, well, we'll send the security with you. He comes up with this little machine and like he's like working on it. But he taps me in with his card and he's like, no, I can't figure this out. But stay in with my card. I'll come back and I'll do it again. So I wait for 5 minutes. He comes back up. He's like, no, I can't figure this out. He goes back down. He calls them. They come back up.
Oh, my God. Now you just want to sleep, bro.
And so,
oh, my God.
So finally, I get like 2.5 hours of sleep. I get to the, like, I wake up, check out at 1:30, get to the airport early. My flight's at 5, but I'm trying to be there by 3 hours before. And stand there forever waiting for them to open the queue. When they eventually open it, I get to the front and they go, do you have your yellow fever vaccination card with you? I'm like, what? Like we did the research. We looked at everything that we needed in order to travel. Never did we see anything about a yellow fever vaccination card. And the guy's like, no, like we can't get you through without it. And I'm like, well, I need to get through. I can't This is, you know, I need to go and do this talk.
Yeah.
Doesn't care, right? Not their problem.
Not their problem.
And so I remember that I did a talk in Kenya and I had a vaccination for that. And I asked the house sitter who was looking after the dogs for us, to please send me a picture of that. And I was just praying the whole time that it was like when she opened it, they would say yellow fever vaccination. And so she opens it. It says yellow fever vaccination. She sends me the photo. I show it to the dude. He's like, cool, you can go through. And then finally I get to, so another 7 hour flight and I get to Santo Domingo. Get to Santo Domingo. I had a taxi booked. So like the guy is waiting there with my name. I go to him. I'm like, I'm Eric. He's like, cool, I'll put you in the taxi. All good, like amazing taxi that he puts me into. 45-minute trip to Santo Domingo. I'm saying to the dude, like, this is the hotel I need to go to. He's like, yes, yes. Drops me at the wrong hotel. I get to the check-in at the top. I'm like trying to check in. Like then he's like, we don't have you in our system. I'm like, but this is my booking. She's like, oh, wrong hotel. So another taxi, another 10-minute trip.
Oh my God.
Finally get to my hotel.
Jeez, that's
check in.
Wow.
Dude, it was the... Yeah, but what was amazing is that it was like everything that could have been a bit of an obstacle on the way there was an obstacle. And then the moment I delivered my talk, it was like the talk felt amazing. Like I stepped into it and I felt like I was just flowing with it from the start. And after that, everything just felt like flowed. From there, like getting home, every single trip, every single touch point, flow, ease, like easiest trip ever. Going there, most difficult trip ever. But I don't know. You know, it's just, this is part of the unseen part of the work that we do, which is that we have to deal with
the unglamorous side of, did you have to stay in the Palo Santo, the San Paolo airport for 24 hours?
Or did you? No, I had to, it was a hotel that was like 5 to 10 minutes away.
Okay, yeah. Because I had to stay in the hotel at that airport for 24 hours. I mean, I was eventually greeting everybody in the airport. I was like, hi, yes, hi. Yeah, just like walking up and down that airport. Quite a thing, being stuck in the airport for 24 hours.
Yeah. Well, hearing your story You made me even more nervous about that trip.
Yeah, but thank goodness I told you about that because, I mean, I got stuck outside. Yeah, no, I mean, there was a rigmarole, let me tell you. And then I've got to travel. I mean, Gloria, our travel agent, she's excellent, but sometimes it's 3 a.m. So, like, I mean, she can't do anything.
Yeah.
So now you're, like, stuck in, like, in a country that doesn't speak your language. Like, oh, my God. It's happened to me a few times. And but thank goodness for Aurelio, that eSIM
lifesaver.
To have an eSIM. Sure. I mean, obviously we're not sponsored by them, but to have an eSIM land and everything's ready to go, it's a game changer. I just used it in 3 weeks in America, so I just use an American one, and
it's amazing.
Oh, what a game changer!
Yeah,
yeah. High time it came out.
If you're traveling, Aurelio. That's the eSIM app, and it's so easy. You just buy for $7. You buy an eSIM for whatever country, for 1 gig of data. Yeah, really cool.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so tell us about. Well done. You made it back in one piece, and I'm also jet lagging, to be honest. Dude, so
it was.
I'm with you.
Yeah, because where was
Austin.
Your retreat?
I was in Austin, which is an amazing city. I really enjoyed it. I think it was my favorite American city that I visited. Up and coming, clean,
barbecue,
parks, lakes. I mean, geez, the barbecue, Texan barbecue. My God, I went to so many Texan barbecues. I mean, it was fantastic. Really, really good. Look, the retreat. You know, people often ask me, why do you keep going back to these retreats? And the response is, I'm always a different person. So every time I arrive at these retreats, I hear something new. I engage with the information differently. And it was so deep, so quickly. The meditations were incredible. His work is kind of the same, evolving a little bit, but just very deep, very sincere. I'm always reminded of Dr. Joe's incredible mission that he has. And his mission is so loud and larger than life that this 62-year-old man is on stage 14 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dude, you know, you can be on stage for 3 hours and you're like, okay, half day workshop, no more. I'm done.
Yeah, done.
Done.
Done. Yeah.
And this guy's 14 hours a day. I mean, as an audience member, I was tired, let alone a guy who's running it, holding the energy and engaging with you with hardly any slides, any notes. I mean, it's just fantastic that he's able to do that. And he does that 1 week on, 1 week off, 1 week on, 1 week off with hundreds of staff moving in places with him. I mean, it's just like it's an epic logistical machine that they've created. The one thing that really, go on.
Yeah, sorry. I just wanted to ask because you've been to 12 retreats, but you've also listened to like his interviews that he's had all over the show. You know, like on Lewis Howes and we've said this before. What's quite interesting about Dr. Joe is that he uses the same language. You know, like you can just hear how mentally rehearsed he is. And so I would assume, but I'm wondering that. In the retreat, there's lots of new content that he covers that you haven't heard or that you wouldn't hear in the public space.
Well, look, the only thing that he speaks about quite freely in the venue is his engagement with other entities from other dimensions. Like he's very comfortable talking about this engaging with multiple different entities from multiple different dimensions. And the way he explains it is that when you start to tap into your crystals inside your pineal gland, what happens is that the crystals in your pineal gland are almost like your TV station radio waves. And when you mess with those or you trigger them, you start to tap into different radio stations and different realities and engaging with different entities. And I was a little bit taken aback because he was talking about it so comfortably in Texas with 90% new people that have never meditated before in their lives. And he's like quite comfortable and start talking about these entities he's engaging with. So I don't see him doing that online a lot, but in person he's...
I've never seen him do that.
Yeah, he's very comfortable talking about those entities and chatting about them and who they are and what they're doing. And very open. And if you think about it, to be honest with you, dude, I mean, our eyes see 0.004% of the potential light in the world. Think about how much your dog can smell that you can't. Think about how much you can't hear that your dog can hear. We are so engaged with such a linear, thin slice of reality that obviously there's things outside of it, but because our five senses determine what is real, and then you speak to people that are materialists, and anything outside of your five senses is just rubbish and hoo-ha, which is the most ignorant, arrogant way to think about reality, that your five senses are, that's it. That is the peak of experience in the universe. So yeah, very, very interesting, but yeah, go on.
I saw a thing this week that said that crows actually, like black crows, yeah, actually have a very thin film layer that covers their feathers. Yeah. And that if we were able to see it, we would actually see that they are like colorful.
Wow.
That they actually aren't black, but we can't see that film layer. Our eyes can't pick up those frequencies.
Wow.
And so actually, like, crows are these very colorful birds. Yeah. We just can't see it.
Yeah, wow.
So just to your point.
I didn't know that, yeah.
Because we know there are entire spectrums that we can't see. Yeah.
So, like, you think about infrared and x-ray just for two. Like, you can't see those.
And there are many millions. Animals can't. Can.
Yeah.
Yes,
exactly.
Yeah.
So the one thing I took away this time was our focused attention and how much power is in our focused attention. And our ability to become aware of certain things changes the thing that we are aware of. And the example that he used is, think about your nose for a second. And you like, think about your nose and you're like, oh yeah, my nose is here. And you're like, your lack of awareness of your nose wasn't actually even there. And now all of a sudden it's there. You can start to think about it and do things with it. And he says, now take that same awareness. And he says, when you're not aware about something, you can't deal with it. It doesn't exist for you because you can only deal with things that you think that you're engaging with and aware of. And he says, now science is proving to us that we have behind this version of reality that we are engaging with our five senses sits this infinite world of which made up of molecules and atoms that are 99.999% empty, pregnant with potential. And he says, if you don't understand this other world, you can't engage with it. If you're not aware of it, you can't engage with it. So becoming aware of it gives you an opportunity to manipulate it. And it's this level of awareness and focused attention that gives you an opportunity to actually start to deal with the blueprint of your life, which affects your money, your health, your relationships, all these things that it affects, you know? So I just really took away, and he's got this range of meditations called BOTEC, Blessing of the Energy Centers. And it's really about focused attention of the energy centers in your body and what that does to your body. Think about when you have a plant that you give attention to, that plant grows differently. The dog grows differently. Your partners grow differently. Your attention on money, whether it's lack of or abundance of, changes how money engages in your life. And so you think about this invisible web that's sitting right outside of our five senses, governed by our brain waves. And so he takes you through this process of accessing that potential through a process of meditation, which is honestly, I mean, if you think about it, I don't know what else is more future focused than our ability to change our focus from this reality into another reality, to manipulate that reality into more things that are more fluid in what we want. I mean, that is the most cutting edge thing that you can think about. And it's more cutting edge because it's more cutting edge than any technology. Why? Because you're sitting with latent power inside your head that we have never been taught how to access. And he's now teaching us how to access this ability to move between realities. That is like time travel. That is like reality travel. That is like non-movement travel, because like we all think about moving from point A to point B takes time. In his world, when you go into that quantum world, there's no time and there's no space. Space has collapsed totally. And what I love more than anything else is he now has scientists joining him on stage with documents and programs and research that's now been printed in Nature magazine and peer-reviewed by other scientists. And these are top scientists from the San Diego University that are now bringing all the paperwork and all the he's changing the way the medical fraternity is thinking about meditation. And he's now got a lot more confidence in what he's talking about. He says, because I was called a pseudoscientist for years, and now I finally got the gravitas to want to tell people this is rooted in science. That's all it is. It's rooted in science. It's mystical, but it's now being rooted in science. So, you know, how excited am I? I booked my 13th event in December, and I don't think I'll ever stop going until something else pops up.
But yeah,
for the moment, I cannot recommend it highly enough. I'm so in respect and in awe of this guy. He's, when you see him in action, you know, I don't only see him as a teacher. I see him as a speaker. I see him as a man. And just what he's done to my life and given me the opportunity to disengage and disengage with repetitive, monotonous ways of thinking that we all suffer from is just the biggest gift you can ever think of for yourself and for the people around you. So, yeah, highly recommended, as obviously.
Amazing.
As usual.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that summary. Does he talk about his own meditation practice? Like, I'm wondering if he still spends a lot of time in meditation. Yes. Or whether he...
He does. He even says that... and he often says, he says, it's okay to lose it, and I lose it. He says, I lose it a lot. He says, but every time I lose it, I go into a meditation and become heart-centered and then start again. He says, sometimes I'm late for meetings because I'm centering myself. He says, I've fallen off center. And he says, that's okay. And also what's really amazing is today at 6 o'clock, I mean, today we're recording this at 10 minutes to three, but at 6 o'clock tonight, I am speaking to his head scientist, Hemal Patel. And Hemal and I shared a stage at the NASA event a few months ago, and he loved my slides. And I saw him again in Dallas now, and I said to him, Hemal, your slides are so bad still. He says, I know, I need help. I'm like, cool, I'm going to help you. So today at 6 o'clock, I'm speaking to Hemal to help him build slides. Yeah, so I'm excited about... helping the mission tell the story better, and to have my skill there amongst those people is just a wonderful gift and a privilege. So I'm looking forward to that as well.
Tell me, how is your meditation practice changing coming out of this?
Oh my God. Oh my God. Deeper. Like, I mean, I'm doing one hour, 30 minute meditations easily, comfortably. The other night I did a two hour, 20 minute meditation. Like, like when you start to understand what it's doing to you, your being, your ability to manipulate this world that is invisible to our current eyesight, you realize that it's a incredible necessity to bring that level of calmness to your nervous system, and the ability to be optimistic about uncertainty can only really be done when you're in the space of nobody, nowhere, no time. I mean, just to very quickly recap that, is we are somebody, somewhere, and some time. And this somebody, somewhere, and some time comes with stories, memories, health issues, relationship issues. And what we usually try and do is fix ourselves and forgive people and become healthier while we are somebody, somewhere, and some time. And it's very, very difficult to do that because you're quite the solid matter and character. What you have to do is become nobody, nowhere, no time. And in that space of becoming nobody, nowhere, no time, you lose your stories, you lose your memories, you lose your identity. And from this place of identityless, where you become this pure source, divinity, whatever you want to call it, you then start to design the life you want from point zero. And as you start to do this more and more and more, you become everything, everywhere, and all time. You become engaged in oneness, as he says. And in the space of oneness, you are everything, you are everywhere, you are in all time. And you can start to engage with this from a very different type of perspective. And the more often you can do this, the more often you can start to engage and manipulate and to create the world that you actually want to be creating. So yeah, it's deepened my meditation.
So beautifully said, man.
Yeah, thank you.
So beautifully said.
Thank you.
And it's, you know, I think if that's not like the motivation you need to go meditate, then I don't think anything can get you to go and meditate. And there are so many, you know, when you go and look at the meditations that Dr. Joe has on his website, there are so many easy ways to get involved in it. You know, like, you obviously have now done 13 retreats. You've been going at a meditation practice for many, many years. So 2.5 hours for you is something that you can deal with. Whereas I often try and remember what it's like to not have meditated ever before. And that first time when you sit down and it just feels so disjointed and you feel distracted and you aren't really quite sure what to expect. And because of that, that first session isn't necessarily as good as it could be. And because of that, you end up not continuing the practice, not realizing that the more you continue the practice and the better you become at it, just like any other skill, really, the more you gain from it. And so when you go to Joe's website, I mean, he has meditations that are like 15 minutes in duration all the way through to much longer things. So I think there's an entry point for anyone that wants to get into it.
I think it's also important to realize that meditation is not sitting there to try and make your brain empty. Stop doing that, because you're never going to achieve that until you've really become a better meditator. And the best thing about Dr. Joe is that it's guided. So you just have to sit there and listen. That's all you have to do. And he takes you to do some breath work. And he has an Emmy Award winning musician that I've become friends with, Barry Goldstein. And he sometimes has 17 layers of music that he's got in between his words. And everything is science. Remember, and anybody who thinks this is airy-fairy, just remember, Dr. Joe is an Italian 60-year-old man. You don't get less airy-fairy if you tried. Like, these are, it's like, you know, that character. Think about that character. He's like, don't bring this shit to me. Yeah. I don't want to engage with this rubbish. So he's like very much that character. So the best place to start is first be kind with yourself and relax into it, that you're not going to become very good straight away. But start with 10 minutes and 15 minutes a day and then grow from there. But make sure that you're eventually getting yourself to 30 minutes once or twice a day at least. But all of his stuff starts from 15 minutes all the way up to 5 hours. You can find some stuff on YouTube, but it's not always legit and it's not always his work. The stuff that you can buy off his website is obviously legit and made that way. But I would highly recommend everybody pick up a meditation practice and make it a family get together and do it with the family so that you're all doing it and all training your kids to also move into that sort of way of thinking. But either way, wonderful episode.
Bro. Yeah, can I just tell you, I was listening to a YouTube video the other day, and it was a Dr. Joe Dispenza something on success type video. And I'm listening to this, and
not him.
It sounds exactly like Joe Dispenza.
Yeah.
But the content, I was like, yeah, this isn't him. And then when I went into the description, did I only realize I was listening to artificial intelligence. And I've listened to this man for hours on end. And I was like, wow. Like, again, you know, right back to where we started, you know, these amazing tools that you never know how it's going to be used for manipulation and do weird things.
Look, I think if anybody wants to start with him, listen to some of his lectures or interviews on YouTube, but don't do his meditations from there because they're not always legit. But his interviews, when he's being interviewed, are the ones that you want to listen to, because you want to also understand the theory behind the meditation so that your meditation becomes deeper. That's why every time I leave a retreat, my meditations become much deeper, because again, I've been reminded of that incredible potential that we all have that we don't engage with because of our incessant repetition of thinking that we always have inside our heads, you know? So either way, great.
Thank you for that.
My pleasure.
Thank you for sharing.
Thank you everybody for joining us for this week's podcast. Next week, we will have Dallas with us, Olympic star joining us. Sorry, we didn't get it right this time, but his connection wasn't working that well. And until next week, please stay expansive. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a star rating right across all the channels that you listen to it. If you think you need to share this with somebody to let them hear about it, please do so. We always enjoy having more people join us on this journey. And until next time,
goodbye.
Be expansive. Ciao.